Hello, everybody.
Hello, welcome to the 411 Ground and Pound MMA podcast. We are your weekly look into the wide, wacky, wonderful world of mixed martial arts. My name is Robert Winfrey, and I am your host. Thank you, as usual, for joining. There's a lot of MMA content out there, and I'm grateful you choose mine, and I hope that I'm not just. I like to be a little bit more. Hopefully, I am more useful than the regular sort of drama roundup weirdness. I don't know that I talked a little bit about this last week with, the death of Bloody Elbow. I kind of hate the MMA ecosystem has turned into that, but well, hopefully there's still enough people out there doing good work that we can continue to follow that, this doesn't turn into something completely ridiculous that we all have to, in good conscience, almost bow out of. But I don't anticipate that, if I'm being honest. Certainly hope that's not how it goes. All right. On the agenda this evening, sorry for my little ramble there. Tonight, we have a review. Well, whenever you're listening to this, for me, it's night when I record. UFC on ESPN Plus 97, that took place on Saturday, and yeah, that wasn't great. It wasn't quite as bad as it could have been. I mean, on paper, that was, one of the worst cards they put out in a while, and I'm sure that'll be challenged in the near future by even more mindless, unimportant content churning. But I'm getting so not quite as bad as it could have been, but it's I will certainly not call that a good night of fights. But we'll review that, and we will preview this week UFC on ESPN 53. So back on ESPN, and it's a card. We'll go through it. Again, that's what the preview portion is for. Then some news. So yeah, UFC, as far as general news, like there was what happened with Mark Coleman. UFC 301 finally got some real fights announced, so stuff like that. I think that's it for the intro. So, well, almost. Please interact with the product a little bit. Like, comment, subscribe, star rating, written review, whatever's applicable to your podcast platform of choice. And as always, feel free to let people know on social media or in your personal life if you think they'd enjoy the show. So, that's always appreciated. Thank you all very, very much. Okay, let's jump into this. I might have, under different circumstances, taken longer to get to this because UFC on ESPN Plus 97. As always, we start at the top. How did the picks go? I've decided that, for those of you who may be slightly newer, I am keeping track of my picks this year. I pick every fight on every UFC card, and I rather than wait till the end to do that, I just open with it at the top. It was bound to happen, ladies and gentlemen. It was inevitable. Three, four, five, six, seven, eight. Okay, yeah. On the ninth UFC event of the year of our Lord 2024, I finally went negative. Again, this was inevitable. I got close to 50-50 a couple of times. I got a little bit. I had a pretty good run last 3 weeks. 10-2, 9-2, 12-2. Those are good. Well, unfortunately, for a variety of reasons, last night I went 5-7 with one no contest. So, very briefly, let me give you some of my thoughts on that before I get into the fights in particular, and I appreciate your patience with this. Of the seven I got wrong, two of them were just close split decisions. One of which I think the judges got wrong. The other of which I have to just shrug. Like, sorry, I had to just shrug about the way Ovin St. Preux and Kennedy Inzechukwu fought for 10 minutes. There's at the end of that fight, when you have two rounds that are super boring and not much separates the guys, and then at the end of the day, you get split decisions that are 29-28 each way. All you can do is shrug. Like, a 29-28 scorecard for either man is perfectly justifiable. So, can't do anything about that one. The Dolgarian and Rodriguez fight, I think they got wrong, but we'll get to it. That said, still split. And yeah, again, I'll save some of my particulars for later. I think there were only a couple that annoyed me. As we got closer and closer to the event, I kind of went, "What were you thinking?" I don't feel that way about Nzechikou and St. Preux. They're both kind of head cases. Did feel that way about the main event. As we're going through the prelims, and there were a couple of relatively quick finishes back to back. So they do the, hey, let's air some of the stuff from the countdown or the embedded, or whatever they're calling it, like the stuff they put out on YouTube. That's just, hey, here's a couple of minutes of fight week or the build up to it, and we're following this fighter around. They followed Tai Tuivasa for he was the one they highlighted here. And him, he talked about and he gave kind of a tour of apparently a brewery. I can never pronounce that word very correctly. But he owns again a brewery, a place, he's making beer. And the way that gave me, as soon as that aired, I am not normally one of these people that does the, I don't do the, so and so won a press conference. No one wins a press conference. It doesn't matter. Or, boy, I didn't like so and so's body language at a stare down. Like, yeah, it's very, very rare that that's useful information at all. Unless we're talking about someone who is, like, ridiculously dehydrated making weight, it doesn't matter. Frequently, when people talk about that stuff informing their opinions, they're either just guessing, they're just spouting nonsense in some cases, or, hey, by the way, you remember there was a guy who did like a giant diatribe about how everything about the face off, some of the face offs between Khabib and Conor meant Khabib was gonna lose. Means nothing. Most of the time, especially for people who watch a lot, if there's something different at a face-off or a press conference or whatnot, what it does, it's not that thing that makes them go, oh. I mean, I know people who, actually, I know a couple of people who legitimately picked Holly Holm to beat Ronda Rousey early on after that fight was announced. I wasn't one of them, but I know people who did. And I know at least one of them who said it was something about the press conference, or the stare down after the weigh-ins, not press conference, between Holly and Ronda. I listened to him talk about it for a minute or two, and the phenomena he's describing is more accurately understood as, like, properly collating data. And it's weird that sometimes stuff that on its own doesn't actually have any bearing on anything, but it clicks other stuff into place that is much more observable, even if all you only understand it on a subconscious level. Or even not subconscious, but like you can't articulate it, but you know it. So watching Tai Tuivasa give a tour of his brewery made me go, oh, you idiot. He's gonna lose. Now, of course, having an alcohol business doesn't mean any fight. Like, plenty of fighters have tried doing that, some more successfully than others. And frequently, fighters will talk about, their outside business ventures. It's not that. It's not, oh, he's not, all the footage isn't of him training, and he's got a happy and healthy social life, it seems, and, family life. It's not that. It's more that crystallized a lot of the past issues that he's had for me, and brought them into starker relief. And say whatever you want to say about Marcin Toborda, that man is rock steady consistent. And lo and behold, we get to the fight, and that's what happens. So that's one that annoyed me a little bit. Like, really? But eh, I can't go back and change that one. But that one, I think that's the only one that. Okay, here's the other one that kind of got me when I saw them square up was Mearshart and Barbarina. Some of that size difference was a lot more evident when they were in proximity to each other, and yeah, that was a bigger indicator. So that one I probably should have got that one right, but I don't know. Maybe I would have got that one wrong anyway. I wasn't like wholeheartedly in the Barbarina train there. I just said what I thought he had a good chance. Again, I picked him, but. Again, some of the stuff, again, once they get next to each other, oh, right. I think those were the only ones that kind of like bothered me. Like I should have known better. Some of them, like you win some, you lose some. But so that brings me year to date to 77 and 32 with three no contests, because we had one of those last night. So, yeah, once again, this was inevitable. The fact that I went almost the first 10 events on the positive side of things, in some cases quite positive, is more surprising to me than the fact that I got one less than 50-50. So, we'll just see how that goes going forward. Because we're a little over 100 fights now into the year. Right? 77 and 32 would be 109, 119. I don't want to do math. 100, yeah, 109. Sorry, that's 109 plus the three. So 112 fights into the year. Well, again, I hope there's not too many more of those. But we'll see. Again, I'm keeping track of this just for my own edification. And as always, again, gambling is usually not a good idea, especially in something as volatile as MMA. But all right, on to the results. Main event. I mentioned it already, but Marcin Tybura chokes Tai Tuivasa unconscious with a rear naked choke, 408 of the first. How did this play? Tuivasa came out, looked to get after it right away, like he normally does. Tybura absorbed a couple of good punches, bit of an elbow, then got on his own forward pressure, and Tai Tuivasa off the back foot is just not really all that dangerous. Tybura got him going backwards, got a takedown, and Tai Tuivasa on the ground. Look, he has improved over the course of his UFC tenure. Unfortunately, it hasn't been very meaningful. He still can't deal with being on bottom very well. If he can't explode very quickly, he doesn't have the technique. He got pinned down in mount. He got back. He had nothing. He was not very good at attacking the positions, at trying to defend. This far into his UFC career, it's not that, there are some very good fighters who can be out wrestled and out controlled. It's more that if we're doing the same stuff and it's still working all this time later, that's where the problem comes in. So, solid enough win for Tabora. I mean, dude, he's had losses in the UFC. Okay, this is a guy, I may not have given him full credit when I previewed this. But he's been in the UFC since 2016. which is a fairly long time. And he's got a lot of UFC fights. So not only has he been there for, 8 years, give or take. Hang on, I want to find the exact number. He has, after this fight, 19 fights in the UFC in 8 year, in that, 8-ish years. He's busy, and his UFC record is, it's 12-7, which I mentioned the guy's just kind of solid and steady. Some of these losses are a little weird. Lost to Timothy Johnson in his debut, a little weird. Won 3 in a row, lost to Fabricio Werdum, no shame there. Lost to Derek Lewis, not a lot of shame there. Rebounded, then lost to Shamil Abdurakhimov and Augusto Sakai, and those two are probably the low point, if we're being honest. Then he won like 5 in a row before he ran into Alexander Volkov, one of the best in the world. Won another couple of fights. Then ran into Tom Aspinall, current interim heavyweight champion. That's kind of it. So if you look at his losses, he's got three of those that are. Was that just his second UFC stint? Did he have one earlier? No, he didn't. Okay. So the only losses that aren't to like really top-end heavyweights were Johnson, Abdurakhimov, and Sakai. Other than that, it's Werdum, Lewis, Volkov, and Aspinall. Like, there's a lot of guys who don't beat those that those individuals. So he's just kind of rock steady, man. I don't think he'll ever be champion. I wouldn't say it's impossible, but I don't like his chances. I don't even like his odds of even fighting for the belt. That's assuming the UFC ever gets heavyweight sorted at the moment, and boy, is that a whole can of worms. But he is a model of consistency. The last like 3 to 4 years of his career, he is steady as a rock. And you know what? I did not give that enough credit. That is my fault. Mea culpa, man. Good win. Your co-main event went to a no contest 1 minute into the second round. Brian Battle was beating up Anglosa. Won the first round clearly. Not, 10-8 kind of dominance, but undeniable 10-9. In fact, if we did half points, which I don't like, but hypothetically on a half point scale, I wouldn't hate 10-8 and a half here, right? Again, assuming you use the half points to, which I don't like. Just I'm gonna say it straight up. I know we need to do some stuff about MMA judging. I don't know that adding fractions to it when we have had documented math issues already is the best idea. Okay. Second round comes out. It's more of the same, man. Battle's keeping him at distance. He's kicking. They get close. Losa, a little bit of a clash of heads, and then as he's withdrawing, Battle's kind of reaching for a double collar tie. His right thumb glances the eye of Losa, causes the foul. There is a legitimate foul here. Losa then is over, against the fence, and the referee's keeping track of the time. The doctor comes in. He's got the, cold cloth or cold compress or whatever the technical term for it is. I'm like, okay, you got some time. Work with it. Try and clear it out. And he says he can't see. Which, guys, I am not trying to throw slander at Anglosa. Okay? I am not saying he is some kind of coward. I am not saying he was. I'm not insulting his character. Okay? I am simply stating fact. Fact is, if you say you can't see, they will stop the fight. Period. Everyone knows this. or should know this. And he was speaking English, was Losa. Like, he didn't say that there wasn't a translation issue. Now, it might have helped. I don't know. He fights out of Switzerland. He's a native of Congo. Not the Democratic Republic of Congo, but like Congo Kinshasa. So I don't know if another language might have been easier for them to relay to him that you have 5 minutes to try and recover. They were around the 2 minute mark, I think, into the foul time. Like, you still got time, buddy. Let's see if it'll clear up. And he said he can't see. Now, I'm not saying he's lying. Let me be very clear about that. If he couldn't see and he was just being honest, then fair play, man. You got fouled, and if you can't see, you can't fight. It's not that complicated. At a bare minimum, they won't let you fight. So I am not here to, cast aspersions on him. I'm really not. I am going to say the following. One, again, if you, every fighter should know, if you say you can't see, that's it. Do not pass go. Do not collect $200. Do not ask for another extension on time. You have your foul time. If at any point during that foul time you utter the words to the referee, "I can't see," they're stopping the fight. You know this. You should. It is your. This is not obscure rulings here. Right? That's not buried in the bylaws. This is well known. And I don't have a problem with a fighter who can't see saying, "I can't see." I don't. Good. Right? Save yourself, man. You got life. You got a life to live after this. Don't risk something as. You can't mess with your eyes very much. So I don't. Again, I don't look askance at any fighter who, if they're legitimately fouled and can't continue. What is going to complicate matters for Mr. Losa here is what happens after this is read, after this is announced. So he says very clearly, "I can't see." Fight's waved off. Both fighters get brought to the middle. The decision is announced. It's a no contest. And immediately they start squawking at each other, do battle and Losa. Battle's pissed for understandable reasons. Losa's pissed for understandable reasons. And personnel, there's some security. The coaches separate them as they scream at each other. Losa was very vocal. I'll kill you, my man. 90 seconds ago, you were in a circumstance where that would have been legal. Now you want to fight? And let me be clear, I'm not just trying to throw Mr. Losa under the bus here. I can't tell you how many times I've seen a piss poor fight between fighters who allegedly have heat. In some cases, we know they do. And the fight's not great, and it kind of sucks. And then when it's over, they back to shoving and cursing, and "I'll see you outside." Like, you didn't just have 15 minutes of legal violence that you were compensated for to do that. I don't like that. I've never liked that. And especially if part of what just happened was you were fouled and couldn't continue, to then immediately try to pick a fight again. Again, that would have been legal. Now, again, if he can't see, he can't fight, and he got fouled legitimately. But don't. This is behavior that is going to get you insulted. And given how thin-skinned a lot of MMA fighters are, you're opening yourself up to all kinds of issues. So very bad optics. Battle being upset, I understand. This wasn't a deliberate foul, but at the same time, you fouled the guy. So, yeah, that's a little bit on you. And be more mindful of what you're doing. Maybe this wouldn't happen because he was winning that fight, and they both only get half of their potential paychecks. So, especially Battle, who again, that if you are winning, and he was winning without too much, I won't say without difficulty, but it was all going his way. That foul kind of cost you. Like you did that to yourself, man. He didn't run himself onto your fingers. And even then, you don't point your fingers at him. So I don't know. It was a mess. It was unfortunate. Wolves have to see what they do. No updates to the best of my knowledge on how potentially serious the eye injury was to Losa. Hopefully not serious again, man. Your eyes are not something you can play around with, so. Sucked, but there it was. Next up at light heavyweight, Ovince St. Preux versus Kennedy and Zuchukwu. Split decision went to Ovince St. Preux, 29-28. This fight sucked. This was two rounds of nothing, and then a third round that was all right. You could go those first two rounds, you could give them both to the either guy. Nothing else to say there. Apart from, like, you had a couple of head cases here. Kennedy Zuchukwu has a lot of tools, but man, does he just. That guy cannot lock in on game day. I know that he trains with. Oh, is that Mark Montoya or Saif Saud? I think it's Saif. See, yeah, he's out of Florida, so that would be Saif Saud. Because Mark Montoya does Factory X. For the record, Saif Saud's a very good coach. What I'm about to say is not meant to be taken negatively in that respect. And Saif Saud is frequently loud and very engaged in what his fighter's doing. That's his style. Certainly, it's his style for a bunch of his fighters who seem to respond to that in general. You got to know your individual fighters and how to get them to respond. I'm just going to say that for 10 minutes, if your coach is screaming at you, you got to go, you got to do something, and you're not doing anything, your coach should not feel more involved and invested in the violence than you are, who is doing and receiving it. When Nzechukwu's on, he's very good. But that guy cannot find his footing. And don't get me wrong, Ovince St. Preux is not exactly a model of consistency either. But he did enough here. Again, not a great fight. I think the fact that the third round was okay saves this from going on my worst fight of the year nominee list, but just barely. This was not a good fight. Featherweight, Christian Rodriguez defeats Isaac Dolgarian via split decision. These were 28-27s. One for Dolgarian, two for Rodriguez. If you're wondering how we arrived there was a 10-8 for Dolgarian in the first, totally deserved, and a 10-8 for Rodriguez in the third, also totally deserved. Middle round is the deciding one. And I don't. Two of the judges gave it to Rodriguez. Obviously, that's how we got where we did with the result. I don't get giving Rodriguez the second round. Dolgarian didn't do himself too many favors in terms of. Because he landed a fair amount of damage in the first. And had some submission attempts in addition to just out wrestling and kind of ragdolling Rodriguez. Second round, it's a little more of the same, but there's a lot more stalling on the fence, and I guess they preferred that Rodriguez landed a couple of one or two more elbows or something in there. I don't know. I appreciate the fact that weighing damage as like the primary criteria is designed to avoid nothing but stalling, but I've said this before about some other things. Like, I do think that pendulum might have swung a bit too far in that it completely ignores like control and grappling work, and I don't think I love that. And Dolgarian was just gassed by the time the third round came around, couldn't get a takedown. Rodriguez, again, dropped a 10-8 on him. No controversy there. Yeah, just Rodriguez up at featherweight now. He'd fought previously at bantamweight, but had struggled to make weight, so featherweight might be a better fit. Dolgarian, this was his first time getting out of the first round, I think. And man, sometimes you just gotta, it's just different when it's real. I'm sure he's, sparred three rounds. It's different when it's real. He also came out after the fight, and this is something he's posted since, accused Christian Rodriguez of greasing. Now, greasing's a real thing, and I don't think that is a light accusation. I also don't think it's a ridiculous accusation. I don't know. I'm just going to say the following. If at all possible, if you think something like that of your opponent, you tell your coaches between rounds, and there are commission officials there that that information should be relayed to. Like, there's something of a procedure to handle this. Coming out after the fact, it feels a little like sour grapes. You might recall, so those of you who might have been around for a while, I don't know if anyone listening to this has been around as long as this reference I'm about to make. But back in the day, not the way back in the day, but back in the day, there was a fighter in the UFC by the name of Husamar Palhares. And this guy was eventually removed from the UFC because he just wouldn't let go of holds. He was destroying people's legs. But he was a leg lock guy, and he was very dangerous. And sometimes not in ways that are strictly in line with the rules. But he fought Nate Marquardt, another guy many of you may not have ever heard of because new fans. And he went for a leg entanglement fairly early, and the leg slipped out of his grip. As soon as it did, Palhares kind of looked down at his hands like, "What the heck?" Looked at the ref like, "Hey, you see that? My grip slipped. He must be greased." And while he's doing that, Marquardt comes down and just punches him into unconsciousness. And after the fact, he said, "Yeah, kind of think he was greasing." He wasn't. Marquardt, being very aware of what Palhares did, just warmed up harder than usual, so he was sweating when he got in the cage. Which is fine. That's perfectly legal. And that affected the grip that Palhares was able to get. BJ Penn famously accused George St. Pierre of greasing. Like, again, it's a thing, but there's procedures for handling it that are not coming out after, like the day after the fight, going, "I think this is the only reason I lost." It doesn't sound. It's not a good look. Maybe Rodriguez was. I saw no evidence of it personally, but that's just me and my limited perspective. Let's see. Women's bantamweight, Macy Chasson defeated Pani Khientzad via rear naked choke, 354 of the first. Khientzad made this a fight for a little bit, but Chasson persevered through a couple of bad positions. Just bigger, a little stronger, got the back, got the choke. Not a whole lot there. At middleweight, Gerald Merchart beat Brian Barberina via technical submission. This is listed as a face crank. It's a rear naked choke. Yeah, it's not worth fighting. 4:23 of the second. Merchart, bigger, stronger. Very good grappler. So once he forced things into the grappling realm, was very difficult for Barbarina to regain his feet safely and then to disengage. Eventually, Mershart got his back. Now, it's listed as a face crank because the choke is not under the chin, it's across the jaw. But it's very possible to put someone to sleep with that. It's easier to get your arm around the neck and then collapse space, compress the carotid arteries, put someone to sleep. The fundamental mechanics of the technique, this is strangulation, not a choke, but fundamental mechanics there. Here's the thing. If you've got a good squeeze and a good mechanical lock with your arms, you can be across the jaw, and your squeeze is so tight it pushes the jaw back. Because your jaw muscles are, it's not that they're not strong, but they can be, it can be forced open. And proper leverage, you just push all of that straight back, and then what winds up happening is like the bottom of your jawbone, not the chin, but like the bottom of that right angle. It has a technical name, I just can't remember. I want to say it's where the TMJ connects, but that will go back and will actually, you can use that to compress the relevant blood vessels. So it takes more of a squeeze and it's not as easy, but it's definitely a thing. You're not as safe in that position as a lot of people think they are. And that's what Mershart got. Yeah, good enough. On the prelims, Natan Levy missed weight, and then Mike Davis caught him with an arm triangle choke, 1:42 of the second. This was Davis start to finish, pretty much. Better wrestling, good ground and pound. Yeah, just really solid performance out of Mike Davis. Chelsea Chandler missed weight again. And then got a 29-28 unanimous decision over Josiane Nunes. I don't know that Chandler has all that much upside. All that she's kind of got going for her is that she's big. And that's not nothing. I shouldn't say it that dismissively. Her skill set is incredibly pedestrian. Coming off of someone her size, especially if she's bigger and stronger than everyone else, that will get you a degree of. That will get you some places, but she needs a lot of technical work. Right now, she's leaning a lot on her size to get things done. Flyweights, Jafel Filho choked out Ode Osborne, rear naked choke, 4:27 of the first. Just good work from Filho. Came out, they traded some kicks. He got a really nice takedown, actually. He started to hit it. Osborne starts to whizzer and go flat. Looks to counter and then gets rolled over. Just really nice stuff there from Filho. And yeah, Jafel Filho, that dude's going to be a. That guy could be a problem for that division. Really nice finish. Just good fighter. Good fighter. I mean, he almost tore up Muhammad Makhayev's knee with a knee bar, his leg, in their fight. And Makhayev didn't tap, but he was not in a good way there. Next up, Danny Silva missed weight. So, in the interest of disclosure, Natan Levy weighed 156 and a half. When you only miss by half a pound, I still don't like it, but at least you tried to make weight. Chandler weighed 137. Okay, you're missing by a full pound on the allowance they'll give you. That's not great. And then Silva weighed 148 and a half for a featherweight fight. That's not great. Funnish little fight here. A lot of pressure from Silva, Koulibaly. Some good sticking, moving. We got some fun little brawling exchanges. Ultimately, Silva's ability to not just takedown wrestle when I say wrestle, but he out wrestled Koulibaly. Anytime they got in the clinch, almost immediately he'd hit like a duck under, slip around to the back, and start working from there from a dominant position. So good enough stuff from Silva there. Let's see. Jacqueline Amorim defeated Corey McKenna via armbar 138 of the first. Amorim comes out, basically had to beat McKenna twice. So she comes out, lands a couple of good body kicks. McKenna catches one. Amorim, a decorated jiu-jitsu practitioner, says thanks. Gets close enough to safely jump guard, pulls guard, goes for a triangle, gets it locked in. McKenna thinks about tapping, tries to fight through the position. The ref clearly thinks she did because the ref audibly says stop, which normally means fight's over. McKenna looks at him and goes, no, I didn't tap. And he goes, okay, fight on. That's not how that should have happened. So Amarim, who's still got kind of the triangle, switches to switches to an armbar, pardon me. There's some nice details to her armbar here that prevent certain escapes. Use again, armbar flips over, nasty crank on it, then gets the tap. Good win for Amarim. Thiago Moises TKO'd Mitch Ramirez with leg kicks 15 seconds into the third round. He was landing nasty calf kicks all fight. Finally got him to drop in the third, and then if you've never seen, I forget which fight it is. Is it Miles Jury? I think it's Miles Jury. When Donald Cerrone gets him down, he just stands over him and unloads what are somewhat colloquially referred to as FU kicks. Moises at the end of that was unloading those. After the fight, Moises said he felt disrespected. He's been a main event fighter, that's true. Now he's on the second fight of the night. Felt disrespected, and I can understand why. He insulted Brad Riddell, who had to pull out of this fight, said he and Dan Hooker should stop complaining about wrestling or if their gym's not giving them proper training. It's kind of funny. Said he wants to fight Dan Hooker. Okay. I don't hate that. I really don't. And kicking everything off, Chad Anheliger defeated Charlampus Gregoriou. Charlampus, excuse me. 229-28 and a 30-27. Not sure I agree with 30-27. I thought Gregor had the first, but he kind of gave it everything in that first round and then spent the second doing a lot of wall install, but not getting much going. And third round is all Anheliger. So solid enough win for Anheliger. Yeah, that was it. It was a night of fights. Again, this could have been worse, but this wasn't very good. Bonuses. I did not mention a fight of the night. None was awarded. If I had to give one, it probably would have been to Silva and Koulibaly, but for whatever reason, they didn't want to do that. Partially because Silva missed weight. I imagine was a consideration there. Rodriguez and Dolgarian wasn't terrible either. So he had options. They elected not to. And instead gave performances to, I think, everyone who got a finish. Almost everyone who got a finish. Boy, they disrespected Thiago Moises again. But Tabora, Chasson, Filho, and Amorim. So Davis didn't get one either. Jeez. Well, them's the breaks when your bonuses are at the whim of UFC brass. So forgettable for my picks, forgettable in practice, just not a whole lot there for that one. It was a very, very uninteresting night of fights for the most part. But if you want to read my full report, it's in the MMA Zone of 411mania.com. Go give it a read if you're so inclined. I always appreciate that. And yeah, let's move on then, shall we? because the UFC machine, boy, I got through that in a hurry. The UFC machine does not sleep. This Saturday, we'll have UFC on ESPN 53. Minor note here, just because this amused me. So, the soundbite that they went with, and this was repeated more than once throughout the broadcast. So somebody wrote this up and said, this is a good line, let's go with it. When promoting this event, the main event is Amanda Ribas and Rose Namajunas. But the line that was said about this was, don't let the smile fool you, Amanda Ribas is a world-class, something to that effect. The opening bit was, don't let the smile fool you. Then Amanda Ribas is a top flyweight. I forget the back end of that. Now, I'm not one of these people. So, first of all, the fact that being told you have a nice smile or you should smile more got turned into some kind of sexist thing is people being way, I tend to think is people being way too sensitive. Of course, there's also a bunch of jackasses who do mean it as a sexist insult, and to them I say screw you. So understand, I'm not saying that when I say the following. Which is just to say, if you don't want to put a picture of a fighter smiling on your poster or whatnot, okay, I don't care. If the promotional soundbite tagline that you have for one of your competitors is, don't let her smile fool you, doesn't it somewhat behoove you to pick a picture of this woman that is her smiling? Right? I mean, they're using that tagline, and then the picture in the corner for you for this event is her just looking like, it's not even like an angry scowl, it's just, and Rose isn't smiling in her picture either, and again, I don't care. You want to look serious for these things? Fine, look serious. But if you don't have visuals to go along with your claim that this woman has a nice smile and that it might deceive you away from understanding how good a fighter she is, not showing that is just weird. That's all I'm saying there when I point out that that made me laugh more than once. It was just, again, it's a little comical. That being said, Amanda Ribas is a very good fighter, and I don't know. I really don't know how this one's going to go. So, a couple of things here. Amanda Ribas has been very up and down in the UFC. She came in, had several wins in a row. Emily Whitmire, Mackenzie Dern, Randa Markos, and Paige VanZant. Then she got beat by Marina Rodriguez. Pretty badly. Then she rebounds against Virna Jandiroba. Then she loses to Caitlin Chookagian. And this was in Chookagian's in 2022, so a couple of years ago. Was still that, like, last gatekeeper to fighting for the belt. She beats Viviane Araújo, then she gets run over by Macy Barber, then she beats Luana Pinheiro. And that was a okay performance. That was actually down at strawweight. This woman has bounced between strawweight and flyweight a fair bit. It's messed a little bit with her momentum at times. And now she's back at flyweight, where she is, 2-2 in the UFC in this weight class? Yeah, her only wins at flyweight are Paige VanZant and Viviane Araújo, with losses in there to Chookagian and Barber. I don't know that flyweight is her ideal weight class. But, so she's a little bit uneven. But speaking of somewhat uneven, enter former champion Rose Namajunas. On a two-fight losing streak for, I believe, the first time in her career. No, second time. Because technically she lost her last fight before she got into the Ultimate Fighter Tournament, then she lost the finals of that. But since then, she's not had that problem and has had great success. She's a two-time strawweight champion. Has got back-to-back wins over Joanna Jędrzejczyk, knocked out Zhang Weili, and then in 2022 had one of the worst fights I've ever seen in my life when she lost to Carla Esparza. Then she moved up, like over a year later. That was May of 22 when she lost to Esparza. Didn't fight again until September of 23 when she moves up to flyweight and then has nothing really from Manon Fiore. I shouldn't say nothing. That does her a bit of a disservice, but I don't think she won a round. I don't think I gave her a round, but now she's kind of trying to find her footing, and you've got Hibas, who's kind of popular and who the UFC would kind of, I get the sense they'd like to push her a little more. And I don't know what to make of this. This is a very weird fight. In that respect, there's not really another way to say that. These are just inconsistent, slightly weird fighters. And this is the kind of fight that Rose Namajunas normally wins. Let me put it like that. I'm not going to be shocked if she loses, but I'm okay picking her here. I don't know what to make of Rose at the moment. I really don't. She didn't fully separate from Trevor Whitman in that camp, but I know she did more. She's kind of been pulled. She's pulled back a little bit from that. I don't know. I don't have a good feel for her at this moment. Her best, the I've said this before, like the best version of Rose is one of the best female fighters you will ever see. But she is prone to bizarre fights, just weird performances, weird decision making. I do still like her chances here, certainly enough to pick her, but Namajunas, despite that woman is probably going into the Hall of Fame. Not unfairly, but she's on thinner ice than you might think. I mean, if she loses here, that's a three-fight skid. And okay, you had a very weird fight losing to Esparza. You moved up, you lost to a top contender. Manon Fiore, it's not impossible for her to claim the flyweight title. So, no real shame there. You jumped way into the deep end there when you made your divisional debut. Now you're taking a step back in competition, which is not unwarranted, but if you're still top of the heap and you take a step down, you better win. If she comes up short here, I don't know. I don't know how that's gonna, I don't know what's next for her. I really don't. Your co-main event, because we're at the apex, is heavyweights. Justin Toffa. Now, you may recall that Justin Toffa was supposed to fight Marcos Rogério de Lima a couple of weeks ago. He was replaced by Junior Toffa after sustaining apparently a very minor knee injury. They just swapped opponents, basically. Poor Junior got run over by de Lima. And Justin Toffa now fights Carl Williams. I picked Justin to beat de Lima. And let me have a quick look at Carl Williams here. That's a bit too far. Sorry, scrolled too far. Williams is from the, oh, I remember this guy. He's from the Virgin Islands. 9-1, 2-0 in the UFC, wins over Łukasz Brzeski and then Chase Sherman. I feel like this is tougher. Wow, actually, Williams is the favorite. Was he a heavy wrestler? I'm still going Taffa. I don't know how much that knee injury. The other thing though, like how serious was that knee injury? It was serious enough that he pulled out, and you don't just get to claim like you got a knee injury. Something was up there. Might have been very minor. Yeah, Williams will wrestle you to death. I think I'm still gonna go with Taffa, but I don't know how much I like that pick. Middleweight, Edmund Shahbazyan, desperately trying to salvage his career. 1-4 in his last five, lost to Derek Brunson, Jack Hermanson, Nasruddin Imavov, and most recently Anthony Hernandez. Somewhere in there, he's got a win over Dalsha Lungiambula. But if that's all the win you can get. Now, look, Brunson in 2020 was still pretty darn good. Jack Hermanson today is still pretty darn good. Nasruddin Imavov, still very good. Imavov and Hernandez are both currently top middleweight, so he's not losing to scrubs. But man, I think this is the problem with him, man. Same problem that a lot of guys who fight out of he left Glendale. He left the Glendale Fight Club, but that guy badly needed to retool and adjust some of his game, and he couldn't. So Dobson is 7-2 with a no contest. 1-2 in the UFC, lost to Jacob Malkoon and Armin Petrosian. So he got out wrestled. And then got a little bit, probably got outstruck by Petrosian. And then he beat Tafan Chukwi last time out. Man, if Shahbazyan can't win this, I think that's it for him in the UFC. That's where we are with him. And I might be at the point where I just don't pick Shahbazyan. I don't. When I say I'm not gonna, I'm not gonna pick him. He's the favorite. Almost 2-1. Jeez, that's asking for trouble. Just straight up making Shahbazyan a near 2-1 favorite at this point. That is asking for trouble. I'm gonna go with Dobson. I'm just, I think the book on Shahbazyan has been written, and we haven't seen that we have not seen him demonstrate that he has changed. How those answers work. But I do think this is his last shot. Like if he loses here, he's probably getting the axe. Bantamweight next, Peyton Talbot and Cameron Simon. Simon coming off of his first loss. Christian Rodriguez missed weight and then won a unanimous decision. Prior to that, he was 3-0 in the UFC. He was 9-0 overall, so 9-1 at the moment. Simon's pretty good, but Talbot is 7-0. Had a really good UFC debut when he beat Nick Aguirre. What are the odds on this one? I think they're with Talbot. Yeah, not a lot, though. Not a lot. That's about right. That'll be about right. Simon, very capable of winning this fight. Talbot looked really good. The question is this his is he kind of got the favorable fight coming off the Contender Series? Are they trying to give him more than one, or is he only going to get the one? Simon's no joke. He really isn't. My temptation to predict this as a no contest is actually rather high, but I'll go with the odds on this one, slightly for Talbot. But Simon, a very live dog there. That actually could be a good fight. Featherweight, Billy Quarantillo was supposed to fight. That's the other reason Dobson might not be the favorite. Shabazian was supposed to fight Dusko Todorovic. I would have picked Todorovic for the record. Todorovic had a knee injury and was replaced by Dobson. Short notice might be another reason to favor Shabazian there. Billy Quarantillo was supposed to fight Gabriel Miranda. Miranda pulled out and was replaced with Yusuf Zalal. I think I would have picked Quarantillo either way. Billy Q is pretty darn good. His only UFC losses are to Gavin Tucker, Shane Burgos, and Edson Barboza. And of those guys, only Barboza stopped him, and that was a pretty sick knee from Barboza. He rebounded nicely his last fight out, beating Demond Jackson. Zalal is coming back to the UFC. So Zalal debuted for the UFC in 2020, won his first two fights, then lost three in a row. Three in a row, and then he had a draw. Now, in fairness to Zalal, that first loss in the UFC was to Ilia Topuria. No shame there. That guy's pretty good. Then he loses to Sungwoo Choi. Choi's not championship material, but he's not a scrub. Drops a split decision to Sean Woodson that I agree Woodson won. It's the draw with Blackshear when he cut down to bantamweight for the first time that really seemed to be like, okay, out you go. Since then, he's won three in a row. All of those finishes. So, again, we're talking regional level stuff, but no shame in winning. I don't have a problem picking Quarantillo here. So, going with Billy Q. Out of curiosity, I imagine Quarantillo is a decent favorite. That's closer than I would have thought. A little closer than I would have thought. That's okay, though. I don't set odds. I'm kicking off the main card. We have Fernando Padilla and Luis Pajuelo? Or Pajuelo. Where are you from, sir? Peru. So Pajuelo? Pajuelo? Probably Pajuelo. The Peruvian accent I do not have a good handle on, so forgive me. Pajuelo is 8-1, 5-fight winning streak, coming into his UFC debut, won on the Contender Series. Not bad there. Padilla is Mexican. 15-5, lost his UFC, no, won his UFC debut, knocked out Julian Arosa. That's nothing to sneeze at. Then he got beat by Kyle Nelson. Losing to Kyle Nelson these days. That's not a great marker. Odds are a little bit with Padilla. I have no faith in this pick. Padilla didn't come in off the Contender Series, did he? That might affect my pick here. No, he earned his way in the old-fashioned way. Okay. I'm gonna actually, I think, go with. I don't know. Padilla did look okay in the last fight. 15-5 versus 8-1. How did Pajuelo. I'm gonna mispronounce it. I should just call him Luis until I know how to pronounce it. Third round finish to get in. Okay. Makes me think he's not getting a favorable matchup. right. Yeah, we'll go with Padilla. But am I really? Yeah, I am. I don't love it. That's a close fight and a lot of unknowns there. Still not sure about Talbot and Simon pick. I'm gonna let I'm still if I change I have until the end of the podcast to change my mind. That one's just so close. I would not bet on that one. Sorry, I shouldn't talk betting. All right, moving on. Leaving that one. Lightweight, Kurt Hollebaugh and Trey Ogden. Hollebaugh just got came back to the UFC, won a that tough season where it's like, hey, guys who washed out of the UFC, here's your chance to come back. So Hollebaugh's first UFC run went 0-3. Knocked out by Barcelos, tapped out by Burgos, and then had nothing for Thiago Moises. So he choked out Austin Hubbard. That was actually impressive. I thought Hubbard was going to win that. So that was good stuff from Hollebaugh. He's sticking at lightweight here, taking on Trey Ogden. Ogden 16-6. 1-2 with a no contest in the UFC, coming off of that no contest with Nicolas Motta. Prior to that, he lost to Ignacio Bahamondes, has lost to Jordan Leavitt as well. His only win is over Daniel Zellhuber. This feels like Hollebaugh. I don't think this is some kind of gimme. Wow, the odds are with Ogden. The size will be a problem. I don't think Ogden could make 145 ever. Like, not since high school has that guy weighed 145. I'm still going with my gut there. I'm going to go with Hollebaugh. But it's entirely possible he just washes out of the UFC a second time. Featherweight, Ricardo Ramos and Julian Arosa. I'm sorry, this is Ricardo Ramos. Does he? I think he prefers Ricardo Ramos, though. I can't remember. There's a few of those Brazilian guys who have said, no, use the English R pronunciation. I think it's I think he likes Ricardo, but does prefer Ramos. I don't remember. Sorry, there's a lot of weird minutia like that that floats around in my brain, and some of it gets confused because I know Ronnie Yahya preferred Ronnie at the end. Hamosh, I'm gonna go with Hamosh because I'm pretty confident in that. He's been trading wins and losses for a bit. Lost to Lerone Murphy, beat Bill Algeo, lost to Zubair Tuhugov, beat Danny Chavez, lost to Charles Jourdan his last time out. So does he keep the win-loss thing? Julian Arosa, man, that guy has been up and down and all around. I mean, he's on like his third stint in the UFC, right? Yeah. Which has gone okay. He's what, 5-3? Beat Sean Woodson, that was actually nice. Knocked out Nate Landwehr, got beat by Sungwoo Choi, beat Charles Jourdan, lost to Steven Peterson, lost to Hakeem Dawodu, both of those guys missed weight. That knock so he beat both of those guys after they missed weight. My mistake. Then he lost to Alex Caceres. And lastly, he got beat by Fernando Padilla. How old is he? 34? And we're at featherweight. I mean, Hamosh is not exactly a spring chicken. He's only. Dude, Hamosh is only 28. That man has the face of a 40-year-old. I don't say that as an insult, I say that as a fact. Yeah, this is Hamosh. I feel okay with Hamosh there. I'm not counting Arosa out at all, but I'm okay going with Hamosh there. What are the odds? for the sake of my own curiosity. Yeah, they're with Hamosh. Again, that tracks. Let's see. Next up, Bantamweight, Miles Johns and Cody Gibson. Johns. He's had some weirdness. Let's see. His UFC career. Cole Smith lost to Batista, Natividad, Anderson Dos Santos lost to Castaneda, beat Vince Morales, technically beat Dan Argueda, but then failed a drug test. Johns is pretty good. I don't remember him now. Cody Gibson just came back, lost a really tough fight with Brad Katona to get back into the UFC, but he got in anyway. This is not a gimme. But Gibson's like sort of like career reformation that he showed off on that season of Tough, that's not to be discounted. Pretty big for the weight class, too. I still kind of want to go Johns. Got a fast double leg. The odds lean a little bit towards Johns. Didn't serve a long suspension for that failed drug test. It was September of last year. That's a real tough one. Yeah, I think I am gonna go with the odds on this one. No. Gibson. Gonna go with Gibson. Oh, am I? Gah. There's a few of these on this card that I'm really. No, I'm going with Johns. That's a winnable fight for both guys, but I still think Gibson can be out-wrestled. Featherweight, Jarno Ahrens and Steve Wynn. What do we got here? Ahrens is doo-doo-doo. He's Dutch, right? Yeah, from the Netherlands. 13-5-1. 0-2 in the UFC. Losses to William Gomez and then Seung-Woo Choi. Might be win or go home for him. Wynn is 9-1. 3-fight winning streak. Coming into his UFC debut. Yeah, let's go with Wynn. Feels like they're giving him kind of again. If that's a manage, that's a very manageable first fight. What do we got next? We have Montserrat Rendon, who I don't know should be in the UFC. She's up at bantamweight now. Good grief, that woman is tiny. Anyway, she is fighting Daria. I am going to mispronounce this. I know it. So I apologize in advance. She's Zelenzynyakova. I probably didn't pronounce. I don't think I butchered it. I may not be right, but I hope I didn't butcher it. So Daria Zelenzynyakova. There we go. She's 8-1. Coming in, won her last fight. I just don't know that I pick Rendon at this point to. Oh, wait, sorry. I was confusing my Montserrat there. Montserrat Rendon is 6-0. This is not Montserrat Ruiz. My mistake. Same first name. Cut me a little slack there, please. That's not a very common name in the UFC. I hope that should be an understandable gaffe on my part. Little bit like confusing your, various Subnur Magomed, like if you see two different people with the last name of, something Nurmagomedov. You kind of go for me like, wait, wasn't that guy in the other weight class? And then no. Okay, yeah. Don't kill me for that one, please. Rendon is 6-0, as I mentioned. Got a win in her UFC debut. A split decision over Temirtas Vidal. What's Helen Zenyakova doing? She's eight. I mentioned already. She's 8-1. Has she beaten anyone I know? Has she been fighting? Last few fights in Aries FC. That's a legitimate promotion. Regional, but legitimate. She beat Marie Loiseau her last time out. Wonder if that's any relation to David Loiseau. The odds are with Zelenzhen Yakova. Yeah, a little bit. Rendon was not exactly. She got the win in her debut, but going life and death kind of with Temirtas Vidal. Let me trust the odds on this one. I'm listing her by her first name on my spreadsheet because that's easier. But I don't. Dude, Rendon was the underdog against Vidal, and I picked her to win that. I don't know. I'm going with the Russian. But let's see. Flyweights, Igor Cervino and Andre Lima. What do we have here? Two undefeated guys, one 8-0, the other 7-0. Both making their UFC debuts. Let's see, Cervino coming off of the Contender Series, Lima also coming off of the Contender Series. I don't know what to think about this one. That's just kind of a weird fight. So I don't want to be here forever doing this. They're ranked very closely to each other for the Brazilian regional scene. Wow, we got a lot of fights fall out on this card. Jeez. I mean, I knew about a few of them, but. Let me go with Lima. That's kind of a coin flip there for me, so no faith in it. And kicking everything off, we had Muhammad Usman at 10-2 against undefeated Mick Parkin at 8-0. I think Usman's the favorite here. I can find some place with the odds on. Some of these fights are not listed odds-wise. Actually, Parkin might be the one that's the slight favorite. That would track. Boy, I don't know how to lean on this one. Usman's gas tank might be the big question mark here. Yeah, I'll go with Parkin. Not by a whole lot, but. Enough. And that is it. Geez, really? Wait, 13 fights? Hang on. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12. Yeah, 13. Okay. Thought it was 14 for a second there, and 13's more manageable. For an ESPN card, this is kind of weak. There's some stuff on paper here that you might be willing to get excited about. Rose Namajunas is definitely still has kind of as a fan base, but after that, like this is if something happens to that main event, man, they're going to be scrambling because I don't know that you could put any of these other fights in the main event for ESPN proper and be, happy with that. But Saturday, I will be covering it in the MMA Zone of 411mania.com, so please do stop by, say hello. I always appreciate it. Alrighty, let us move on now that my shame and humiliation is potentially locked in for next week. So UFC 301 received some of their fights. So we'd known a couple of these. This is their return to Rio de Janeiro. This will be May 4th. Again, we'd known a few, but we didn't have a main event. We didn't have a legitimate co-main event. It was, I think I'd gone over some of this earlier, and I'd kind of arrived at that conclusion. Well, we have our main event now. For the flyweight title, Alexandre Pantoja will defend against number 10 contender Steve Ercig. I can't. I don't know what to tell you about this one, guys. Look, I like Steve Ercig. I actually do. I'm not gonna be too shocked if he wins this. I'll be surprised. But he's got some good boxing fundamentals. And he's good about landing. He's got decent power. I will have no problem picking Alexandre Pantoja when the time comes, but I am not going to sit here and tell you Ursek has no chance. He definitely has a chance. But when you're going all the way down to the number 10 contender to fill in for a title fight on a quick turnaround for Ursag, you know it's because a lot of guys were not available on the timetable in question. And this was all my hunch. They wanted Pantoja to be the co-main event behind Alex Pereira defending that belt in Rio, defending the light heavyweight belt. But they couldn't get anything to come together for the main event for 300, so they moved Pereira and Jamahal Hill to that spot, and that by default bumped up the flyweight belt. I mean, Ursag fought like 2 weeks ago. That's a very quick turnaround. Not unreasonable. Again, this is May 4th, so he's got time to, properly have a camp, more or less. It'll be slightly abbreviated, but piggybacking that much off some of the work done previously will help. But a lot of people, when they saw that, kind of went, really? I'm not that down on it. This is a fine fight. It's a little out of left field. It's very clearly the UFC putting whatever they can together to service the timing of the machinery they've built. And a lot of people were kind of nonplussed by it. And again, I think it's a fine fight. I don't know how good a main event it is. But I understand people being kind of, seeing this and shrugging. Co-main event, a presumptive co-main event, the return of the great Jose Aldo against Jonathan Martinez. Rumor has it this was supposed a lot of people other people are reporting this, so it's not just rumor, but this was supposed to be Jose Aldo and Dominic Cruz. But Cruz, again, the reporting is that Cruz didn't want to fight in Brazil. I don't find if you're gonna take a line like that, I'm okay with it. Just understand that that weirdness is gonna crop up because of it. That's a shame. This will be a bantamweight. Now, that's a shame. Would have loved Aldo and Cruz. That was kind of a dream fight for a long time. Shame that couldn't come together. Aldo and Martinez is. That's interesting. Martinez has leg kick stoppages. Aldo might take that personally, but Aldo hasn't thrown a lot of kicks in years. Martinez is good. Martinez is very good. But this is also, I'm not going to pretend this isn't winnable for Aldo. Last time we saw him, he was still fighting on very even terms with Merab. Like, he stopped Merab from doing almost anything, but Merab's constant pressure kept Aldo from doing a whole lot offensively, is the only reason that kind of played out the way it did. I mean, that was only 3 rounds, and over five, I think Merab probably pulls away down the stretch, but it's a different discussion. So, that's an interesting fight. As for the rest of the card, I talked a little bit about this before, but we have Michelle Pereira and Mahmoud Muradov. I don't hate that at all. Anthony Smith and Vito Petrino, which I don't care about. Drew Anderson Brito and Jack Shore. That's actually not bad. Paul Craig and Caio Barbalho. Meh. What was the other fight on this card that I was looking at and kind of interested in? Couple, actually. Joaquin Silva and Dakar Close, I think, is interesting. Then Elvis Brenner and Miktibek Orlbay. Orlbay kind of caught my attention earlier, so loosely interested. But UFC 301 is largely taking shape at this point. I don't think that's a gangbusters pay-per-view card, but I think it's solid. And frankly, 289 was good. 289 was a good pay-per-view. 299 was, on paper especially, very good. And 300 is, they've tried very hard to stack that as much as they can. So you've had three pay-per-views in a row that took up a lot of material. So 301, not going to be as good. I'm going to go out on a limb and say 302, just scheduled for June 1st. That's probably not going to be gangbusters either. I'm not saying it'll be terrible. I'm saying I don't expect that to knock anyone's socks off on paper. I think since we're doing the fight announcements, let me briefly hit on a change that was announced to the April 6th card that was supposed to be Brendan Allen and Marvin Vettori, a fight I was looking forward to. Vettori had some kind of an injury. Sorry, not some, he had something that caused him to pull out. I believe he's mentioned injury, but nothing specific. He's replaced by Chris Curtis, who stopped Brendan Allen with strikes previously of December of 21. So the Action Man will be back in a rematch. That is a very run-of-the-mill fight card. Even with Allen and Vettori, which is a more relevant fight, I think, than Allen and Curtis, just by virtue of Vettori being ranked higher. This is a very uninspired card. Man, what on this is worth? Sorry, I'm just looking at it. Trevor Peak is usually good for something kind of amusing. DeMond Jackson and Alexander Hernandez? That's the Leech, right? No, that's Action Jackson. He changed his last name. He changed his nickname. I don't know, man. Hernandez at featherweight, like, that's been a real mixed bag. Court McGee's fighting Alex Morono. Cynthia Calvillo, remember when she was going to be a thing? Oh, hey, Jermaine Durandam, he's fighting Norma Dumont. That won't suck, right? Sorry, I really need to. It's a fight night. It's at the Apex. That's an ESPN Plus card. It is what it is. Yeah, so that was some fight announcements. Okay, last thing here that I have listed, and then we'll see what's broken. And if nothing, we'll do plugs and get out of here. So, UFC Hall of Famer, first UFC heavyweight champion, former Pride Grand Prix winner, Mark Coleman. The Hammer. Mark Coleman has been in some tough situations recently. Last few years. He has had both hips replaced, I believe. I know one of them. I think both. He's had some complications related to those surgeries. I believe he had a heart attack a couple of years ago. Or something similar to that. Well, all that sucks. So this is a lot to talk about here with what I'm about to mention. So During the week, his house catches on fire. Like in the night. I think night. It mentions they were woken up, so I assume night. His dog woke him up. House is already pretty heavily on fire. And Mark Coleman, who is not a young man, and Mark Coleman said he was coming out of retirement for a celebrity boxing match, which was always a terrible idea, especially with two busted hips. But this man is 59. He is not a young man. And has had a multitude of health issues. Again, two hip replacements, heart issues, complications from surgery, years of steroid abuse. Bear in mind, when I say his house was on fire, by the account that he gives, because thankfully he's still with us, that's not like, oh, there's a fire in the house. It's the house is on fire. And, we're health complications and all. He carries his father out of the house, goes back into the burning building, carries his mother out of the house, goes back in to try and save the dog. He's unable to do so. So sadly, the dog who woke them up and saved their lives didn't make it. House is a. There's pictures of the wreckage of the house. That whole thing is gone. This was, again, this was not a little fire. This was like house gone fire. Apparently, it was so bad, like all the hair on his mother's head burned off. He almost died. Like, they rushed him to the hospital. They put him in a coma. They had to go in surgically to remove soot from his lungs because smoke inhalation is what it does that. Like, they had to, might not have been surgically, but they had to remove soot from his lungs. And miraculously, he's still here. He's posted some updates. He's awake, responsive. Hopefully no complications emerge. That is some genuinely heroic stuff. I don't have words for that. I really don't. I believe there's a GoFundMe to help with his medical expenses related to this because heaven knows, UFC ain't chipping in. Which I believe it's fully funded and then some at the moment, but if you are inclined to give, I believe that's available. So, ever since that news broke, that family has been in my prayers, and I am. Again, I hope there are no complications for him because he's had some history of that, but that's some genuinely heroic stuff that he did, and my hat's off to him. I sincerely hope that he is with us for many more years. And just terrible situation to have found themselves in. Okay. I think that's everything I have written down, so give me a few seconds to check Twitter. And it's more than that for me, but that's all it is for you. If there's nothing new there, we will do plugs and get out of here. Nope, nothing new, so plugs. Last week on Damn You Hollywood, myself, Mark Radulich, Alexis Haina, and Zachary Wright got together and we reviewed Kung Fu Panda 4. Meh. Decided meh. The week before that, we reviewed Dune 2, so you can check out both of those archives over at the W2M Network. Look up Damn You Hollywood, you should be able to find all of my movie review stuff over there. There is no Damn You Hollywood this week because, well, there's not a major movie release this week. But next Tuesday, because we're accommodating some other people. Damn you, Hollywood. We'll be reviewing the new Ghostbusters movie, and yeesh. I don't know. I'm not optimistic. Maybe I should be, but I'm not. So, be on the lookout for that. If you listen to my other stuff, I also cover mixed martial arts and professional wrestling at 411mania.com. MLW, when they have stuff, I review it. WWE SmackDown on Fridays, UFC events on Saturdays. Occasionally, I pitch in some other places, so you see me around there on occasion. All right, I think that's it for me. Thank you all very, very much for listening. I appreciate you. As always, stay safe out there and continue to be well, be safe, and behave.